Wondering if you should stay in Illinois or move out of state? Get your copy of Scott Tucker's book, Escape Illinois, Should I Stay or Should I Go? Get your complimentary copy at retirementdakota.com.
Investment advisory services are made available through AE Wealth Management, LLC, a registered investment advisor.
Some of you may know that I grew up in a family business run by my dad, a grocery store, but it had a butcher shop. It was known far and wide on the Southwest side, and I know that quality means something, and that's why we drive 2 hours from Northwest Indiana all the way to the Northwest side of the city of Chicago to Joseph's Finest Meats at 7101 West Addison Street. Before you go there, you got to be prepared, so I've got a list for you. Do you have a pen? Italian sausage, hot. Italian sausage, mild. Get pork chops, but order them thick. And of course, get some beef too, like bone-in ribeye steaks. Nothing like it. And if you don't know exactly what to get or how to cook it, ask Ben or Sal and tell them John Cass sent you. And I'd like to tip my hat to Joseph, the patriarch, the owner, the founder who built this store for his family with his two sons, Ben and Sal. In his mid-90s, he had serious heart surgery and he made a triumphant return. He loves his place, and I do too. And so does anyone who shops there. It's like family. They care about the details. They care about you. Joseph's Finest Meats, 7101 West Addison Street, Chicago. A family tradition since 1977, and a proud sponsor of John Cass News and the Chicago Way podcast. We can see the problem. We can discuss the problem, even though we can't touch it. If you're on the left, you're in one silo, and if you're on the right, you're in the other silo. You can't reach out across the silos to your brothers or your cousins or your friends or your goddaughters. They're in one silo, you're in the other. And we're hurtling towards civil war. I don't want to think about it, but it's there. If you look at what's going on in Minneapolis with Don Lamone getting arrested and all the rest of it, the people fighting in church, trying to shout people down, it is serious business. And we have to reach across that silo. That's why we have Tom Bevin, who's made a career encouraging people to reach across, reach from their silo into the other one. Every day, go on Real Clear Politics. Read someone with whom you disagree. I mean, there are lefties I hope would read my columns when they're on there, and there are righties I hope would read selections from The Atlantic or wherever they come from. We have to do that as a country in order to survive, because we don't want to be mindless churls led by the mob. We want to be in front of the mob to direct it toward the place it should go, because the place it should go is loving the Republic of America for which it stands. I'm John Cass. Tom Bevin is our guest. Jeff Carlin, as always, is the co-host, WGN, the executive producer. And we're here on the Chicago Way. And where are you? As screams are in the night in Minneapolis, as people begin to edge away, as Democrats can't even admit that they're standing in the way of federal law, as the nullificationists stood in the way of federal law in the 1860s. But this is 2026, and it's cold outside. This is not April in South Carolina, 1861. This is the Chicago Way podcast on WGN Plus.
So this is a guy who lives high on the hog, and he has this Tammany Hall style attitude to power. And it's the Chicago Way. Absolutely.
Look, the Chicago Way is a deep cultural phenomenon.
It's the Chicago Way.
The Chicago Way. That's the focus.
In a tower by the river, there lived a man. There was a man who took a stand. With pen and paper in his hand. Defeating foes in every ward with a pen more mighty than the sword. No escape from his ink lasso. In a tower by the river. Castle.
Here's how you get him. He pulls a knife, you pull a gun. He sends one of yours to the hospital, you send one of his to the morgue. That's the Chicago way.
As promised, our guest today, Thomas C. Bevan, the American writer and media executive, co-founder of and publisher of Real Clear Politics. I don't think they call you publisher now. You're the president of Real Clear Politics, yes?
Something like that, you know? We're not big on titles. We just kind of just do our thing, so.
Well, what we're big on is context. With all the stuff going on in Minnesota and the nullificationists and the leftists, American leftists, demanding to be treated like Confederate nullificationists, I'm thinking of Tom's senior thesis at Princeton, A Deadly Society, Confederate Soldiers yes. at Point Lookout Prison. If there's anyone
I've God. Been making... You did a deep dive, brother.
I've been making this nullification argument for a long time, and so is Victor Davis Hanson. And what about it, Tom?
Well, I must say, in my defense, so when I got to Princeton, I didn't really know. Well, actually, I thought I wanted to major in biology, and I you guys can hear my dogs in the background, unfortunately. That'll stop momentarily, I hope. But I thought I wanted to major in biology. And I took my first bio class and I took my first test and I immediately went to the registrar and switched that to pass-fail. So then I was like, well, what do I want to do? And I took a class with James McPherson, who was a professor at Princeton at the time. He wrote Battle Cry of Freedom, which was a prize-winning book on the Civil War.
Yeah, great book.
And I just, I read every page of that thing and I kind of fell in love with history and with the history of the Civil War. So that's what I ended up majoring. I majored in American history and I wrote my thesis on the Civil War. And yeah, I wrote about Point Lookout prison camp in Maryland because it was the only Civil War prison that was in a border state. So you had members of the Union Army and the Confederate Army, in some cases, brothers. Like one guy who was a prisoner at the camp, his brother was a guard at the camp. So it was sort of this fascinating microcosm of the Civil War and the strife and all of that. So
wow.
that's my spiel on that. As far as the nullification argument goes, look, I Tim Walz mentioned Fort Sumter the other day.
Oh.
The first shots at Fort Sumter. And this is while we're theoretically supposed to be de-escalating and calming things down and cooling things off. And yet, and he mentioned Gettysburg a few weeks ago. I mean, this idea, I do think there is something to the fact that we are in a sort of low grade civil war, particularly in blue states, particularly where, the leadership there have decided that they no longer believe in the legitimacy of this administration, the legitimacy of the federal government or federal laws, particularly when it comes to immigration law. And they, instead of trying to advocate for different laws and pass those laws through Congress, which is the way our republic was designed, they have decided to outright defy them, which right. is what is going on in Minneapolis right now. And they're being encouraged to do that by, the governor, the mayor, and various other elected Democratic officials. And so I do think that this is a very fraught period. And for everybody who thinks that this is just, unique to Donald Trump, and when Donald Trump is gone, that things will go back to normal. I just don't think that's true. I think, especially if J.D. Vance becomes president, people are already saying, and J.D. Vance is worse than Trump because he's actually smart and he's articulate and he's the evil genius of Trump or something. So I feel like we're in an era where this is going to continue to get worse before it gets better. And I honestly don't know what that looks like, John.
Well, it's concerning to me because I see the American Republic under attack, really. Every JohnCast news column starts with an idea that is watered by a good cup of coffee. That search for the perfect cup is where my love of coffee and writing began. And that perfect cup comes from Kribi Coffee, K-R-I-B-I Coffee, roasted locally in Chicago. Now, Kribi Coffee has coffee for your love. Let me tell you about the Be Mine Valentine's Gift Kit, a thoughtful Valentine's gift designed for coffee lovers. This curated set features our limited edition Be Mine blend, air-roasted for a signature, always smooth, never bitter taste, with notes of red apple, caramel, and tangerine. It also includes a 15% off discount card, so the next bag is already covered. A classic coffee scoop, Valentine's gift bag, tissue paper, and a heart-shaped tag or a message. Be mine, sweetheart. Be my coffee, Valentine. Kribi Coffee, roasted locally in Chicago. That's KRIBICoffee.com. Have I told you that Kribi Coffee is not some exotic that you can't find anywhere? You can find it everywhere, including Joseph's Finest Meats. Kribi Coffee, where every cup of Midwestern common sense is air roasted, smooth, and never bitter. KRIBICoffee.com. Proud sponsor of JohnCast News and the Chicago Way podcast. Cheers.
The thing that happened in the Civil War that kind of brought it to an end was this just grueling time frame, right? I mean, there wasn't anything other than just everybody's resources had been expended to the point where there was an imbalance. That's what does that look like in this era, right? I mean, that seems like where these things kind of generally end up in, historically speaking.
Well, yeah, I mean, you would hope that we would have some sort of healing or reconciliation or cooler heads will prevail or whatever, but it certainly doesn't seem that way. I mean, you've already seen various commentators, but also Democratic officials calling for, you know, Nuremberg type trials. They want prosecutions. They want, you know, they're taking down people's names and numbers of these ICE agents because they're going to go after them once they're back in power, weaponizing the.
That's an assault.
It is.
That's an assault.
It is a horrible idea, a horrible precedent to set. But they seem inclined. I mean, they truly believe that this is the, you know, this is fascism, and the only way to get through it is to defeat it, and by defeating that means, you know, punishing everyone who was involved with it, apparently up to and including the 77 million who voted for it. And that to me is, again, Trump was duly elected. He was elected on a promise that he was going to do this. He's doing it, and instead of, you know, winning elections or changing laws, Democrats have decided to push forward with this, you know, whatever you want to call it. I mean, people are calling it insurrection, insurgency, but it is clearly an effort, an organized and funded effort to interfere with federal agents performing lawful duties. Now, and you know, has it led to some tragedies and excesses? Of course. And we would all hope.
And more to come.
And probably more to come. Yeah. And unfortunate as that may be. And would we all like to see it happening differently? Yes, I think so. But for whatever reason, you know, and Tom Homan gave this press conference the other day, which I thought he did a great job of sort of just, you know, resetting in common sense terms, in a way that, you know, Kristi Noem couldn't do or didn't do, that, you know, all the federal government is asking for is access to these jails so that they can take the bad guys and get them out of the country. And when local governments don't cooperate and they release these people into the public, it's worse for everybody. It's more dangerous for the ICE agents. It's more dangerous for the public, clearly. And it's more dangerous for the people that they're trying to apprehend. And we saw how quickly this situation with Alex Pretty went sideways. I mean, it was a matter of seconds.
Yes.
And that's all it takes sometimes, unfortunately, for these things to get out of hand in these environments, these chaotic environments that are being created, and the agents are feeling stressed and threatened. And I mean, it's just, it's unfortunate that we are where we are. But again, Democrats seem to think they have the upper hand. And because of that, it is, you know, Greg Bovino, they don't want Greg Bovino.
Hi, Greg.
It's not enough to just have him reassigned. It's not just enough to have the ICE agents put on leave. Right. They want Kristi Noem. They want Corey Lewandowski. They want Stephen Miller. They want all of these people. They want Donald Trump. They want them all to be punished and suffer. And so, you know, I just don't know how we reverse the trajectory that we're on.
As you were making this excellent argument about what's going on, I'm thinking to the time you were here last time and we talked about silos. You could have the best argument, most cogent, realistic argument, and people won't listen to it because they're in their silo. This is the Chicago way. I'm a conservative. I can imagine that there are many people, I can't really imagine it, but there might be many people on the left who don't listen to it or don't like my views, and so they won't listen to it. And then they're not the beneficiaries of this wisdom that you're offering.
Well,
I'm not being sarcastic.
I mean, it would be nice to have a political environment where, you know, you could calmly and rationally discuss the problem and how to solve it. But, you know, we're just so far past that on so many levels. I mean, it just doesn't even, it's almost a non-starter, unfortunately, because of the way that these folks folks on the left have reacted. And quite frankly, look, you know, I said this the other day, I think Kristi Noem was, it's becoming more and more clear to me that she was just a bad pick by Trump. Probably his worst mistake. When you have,
she shot her dog, man. I never.
Yeah, right.
She shot her dog. I mean, she was a governor, but she doesn't have any background in law enforcement. She's never run a massive agency like this. And to put her in charge of the agency that is going to be conducting one of the most important, I mean, this was literally one of the cornerstones of why he was elected. But to put her in charge of that and not somebody like Tom Homan, who has 35 years of experience in law enforcement and doing this kind of work. She just wasn't well equipped. And she, from a strategic perspective, but also from a PR, I mean, the way that they have handled some of these incidents, particularly the last one, have been atrocious. I mean, and so I think it got to the point where Trump had to put, you know, Homan in charge. I feel like if Homan had been in charge from the beginning, we would not be in such a chaotic, dire situation. I could be wrong. That might be just me being naive because the policies and we did some polling on immigration just now that's coming out. People are still in favor, even sometimes majorities, but even pluralities of Democrats are in favor of the policy of removing people who are here illegally, who have committed serious crimes.
Who'd be opposed to it? I don't know who'd be opposed to that, Tom.
Exactly. That's the point. That's a majority position. It's still got majority support when you ask that question. The problem is Democrats have muddied the waters. And I think, you know, look, the ICE operations are not flawless. And so when you get people who have been rounded up and deported because they were just here illegally, which is, that's still a majority position among Republicans, but you lose a lot of support among Democrats and independents if the only crime they've committed is just to be here illegally. And some of those folks have gotten, you know, sent out of the country, or you have these incidents that Democrats have leveraged with, like, the little kid, you know, and all of that, the 5-year-old.
Right.
They've lost the PR battle, and because of that, you know, you're seeing Trump make the changes that he has. But in some ways, you know, again, it would have been smarter for Trump to hire someone who was better at their job, who wouldn't have lost the PR battle the way that Kristi Noem lost it.
Well, on that score, They could have tried to confirm Tom Homan as Secretary of Homeland Security, could they not?
Yeah, absolutely.
Is there any background problem for him? Because I know my brother, Nick, was not confirmed. He was acting chairman of the National Intelligence Council. He wasn't the chairman because he didn't go through Senate confirmation, but there was no, and I have to be careful here, but there was no issue in his background. And I don't think there was any issue in Tom Homan's background, except he wasn't a reasonably attractive female. And that's what Trump wanted in the job. Yes?
Well, he's definitely not as good looking as Christina.
Neither is my brother.
But, you know, I mean, I don't know exactly what service medal Barack Obama laid around his neck when he was in office. But there's video of that. We know that. So I think he did have certainly the qualifications and could have gotten through the confirmation. I mean, he was probably less controversial than some of the other folks who end up getting confirmed, like Pete Hegseth and RFK Jr. So I think he could have, and I think he probably should have in retrospect.
Well, I want to get to this. You know, the Chicago Way is obviously the name of the podcast, and we started with the Confederacy and the Civil War and all that.
Let's get to Chicago.
Let's get to Chicago. Well, the Chicago piece of it is, I mean, that's the Chicago Way to me is, right, is the elected officials pushing and prodding and manipulating the populace to do what they want. And it should be the other way around, right? We're a democracy, we're a republic. And that's exactly what we're seeing on the left. It's this, you know, militarization and activation to get out there with concealed carry and show up in what you know is a violent situation because you've been there before and bad things are happening. And same thing goes with, you know, ICE is escalating this, you know, because their leader wants them to. Is there any chance, Tom, in what you're polling, that people at all are sliding away from following what the leaders tell us and actually thinking for themselves and are more like, well, I trust my neighbors versus the people on TV, the people, elected officials?
Well, I think there's some evidence that that is true, that people, they do trust their neighbors. They are more than they trust politicians. And certainly, you know, it's one of those, there's, and we've probably talked about this before, but there's always this, it's like a sociological phenomenon where it's like, everybody hates Congress,
right?
They have dismal approval ratings. But then you ask people, well, how do you like your congressperson?
Right.
Oh, he or she's really good. I like him a lot. You know, it's kind of like, so it's this, the more localized you get, the more trust people have in their institutions and their officials and the like.
Yeah.
It's the big, bad, you know, faceless bureaucracy of Washington, D.C. that everybody hates.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, and I think there have been, there has been an erosion of trust. I mean, this is pretty clear in the data among a host of institutions, the media, Congress, the presidency, the Supreme Court. I mean, all of these things have been politicized now to the point where, you know, we're so tribal in our thinking that, you know, and this is something that, you know, the day that the election changes, it's like, well, Democrats have no trust in Donald Trump and, you know, the day that a Democrat is elected president, they suddenly have, you know, 80% trust in whoever the Democrat is in office. And Republicans go from having 80% trust in Trump to 10% trust in the Democrats. So it's tough to, we're just very tribal in our thinking about all of these things these days. And that's part of the problem. I mean, we're getting, and John mentioned the silos and the information bubbles, and it's becoming harder and harder to break out of those bubbles and have intelligent, rational conversations about some of these issues and problems, because we just like, we've become like lizard brained about stuff. Right. You know, it's like red or blue and that's it.
Speaking of lizard brains, I hear that one.
That's a professional segue right there.
Thank you. I hear,
I know you're going and I like it.
I hear that one has been arrested. What is going on?
Don Lemon.
I looked for my Tom Bevin mocking on X of Don LeMond. I didn't see it yet. Did you?
Well, I've been busy. I haven't gotten to that part yet. We're going to talk about it on our radio show in a little bit. But
well, let's scoop it. Well, you want to
warm up here with us?
Yeah, sure. I mean, well, I don't know what there is to say about it. I mean, I think clearly, whether he's already done it or he's going to do it in the next few minutes or hours, one thing that is as certain as the sun rising and taxes is Don LeMond producing some, you know, just ridiculously self-aggrandizing video, you know, right, about what a Maudlin victim he is and how awful this is and all of that. I think he's probably going to get off. I think he's probably got a case that he can just say, look, I was being a journalist and I didn't organize this protest and I just followed these people in there and I interviewed a couple people and it's not my fault. And so I suspect, and this is the problem when you do things like this. Remember, they went to a magistrate and they couldn't get a warrant for him the first time around. I think they went to an appeals court.
They went to two or three.
Yeah. They got denied. And so they kept after it and they finally found somebody and now they've done it. And it makes him look like a martyr. It makes him look like a victim. It makes him look like, instead of the sort
it's
of
what he wants,
preening that he is, he ends up getting to play the victim card here. And I suspect that's what's going to happen. And he'll get acquitted. And then he'll be like, I told you so. And Trump's terrible and all that. And so this is one of those cases. I feel like was probably better to just, you know, leave it alone.
Yeah, don't give him the platform at the time.
Yeah, the satisfaction and the ability to, you know, make videos talking about what a marker he is.
You guys are too young to remember Second City TV, which was a show back in the, 70s or early 80s. There was a character on it, and he was a bad stand-up comic played by Eugene Levy, and it was called Sammy Maudlin. Sammy Maudlin. And I think of him, I think Sammy Maudlin every time I look at Don LeMond. So let's talk this about some happy
news. Let's do that.
For Tom Bevin. The happy news that I see is that in a few days in a luxurious resort in Florida, there will be held an important, and perhaps I'm speaking to journalists this weekend, so I'll tell them about this important, most important journalism prize, the Samizdat Prize, awarded by the foundation behind Real Clear Politics. And tell us about that, Tom, because it's important that people know the Pulitzer Prize has been tainted and splintered, but the Samizdat Prize is not, and it stands for something important.
Yep.
Tell us about
this. So this is the third time we've done this. This is our third annual. And so about 4 years ago, maybe a little bit longer, we started talking about, this was when we were really, you know, it was about a year, about a year into COVID, right?
Yeah.
So 2021, you know, we were sort of recognizing around us all of the censorship that was taking place, and it was unlike anything we had ever seen before. This idea, because what we do, you know, we gather opinions, we put them next to each other, we take arguments from the left and the right, and we put them on the site, and we allow people to read for themselves and decide for themselves what they think and what they believe. And
that's why we like
it. Yeah, I mean, that's been our deal for 20 years. And suddenly, you know, we're putting a piece from the New York Times, for example, talking about how important it is to, wear a mask versus an article from a different source, maybe a right-leaning source saying that, you know, questioning the efficacy of masks or vaccines or hydroxychloroquine or ivermectin or, all of these different issues that surrounded COVID. One of the main ones being, was it a lab leak or not? And suddenly there was this intense pressure and censorship that occurred, where only the left side, the left-leaning arguments from the New York Times and the establishment and the public health apparatus Those were the only valid opinions, and anything else was misinformation, disinformation. You were being a, you were being reckless by publishing the idea that this could have leaked from a lab in China, and we, as an organization, were harmed by that. I mean, we there, you know, there were the all of these organizations like NewsGuard and these think tanks that were purporting to be the arbiters of what's true and what's not true and what's misinformation and who you can trust in the media landscape and who you can't. And suddenly, because we were publishing and linking to pieces that voiced some of these opinions, again, along with the other side, suddenly we were seen as, and this was, and plenty of other organizations that suffered a lot more than us and were completely blackballed. And, you know, the New York Post was shut out of Twitter and Facebook and harmed in a serious way. So that was the, we were kind of like, this is insane. And so that's the genesis of the idea behind the Samizdat Prize. And that we needed to recognize and honor people who had the courage to engage in free speech, even when it was harmful to them, and they persevered. And so the first year, we gave the award to, who was it? Matt Taibbi.
Excellent.
Yeah. I mean, and Matt's like, he was for a long time, a guy of the left, and I still don't think of him as like a righty. I just think of him as he's a pretty dogged journalist.
right.
And refuses to sort of, you know, swallow the conventional wisdom. Jay Bhattacharya, who was one of the original signers of the Great Barrington Declaration, which was one of those, this sort of dissenting, documents that right when COVID started. He's an epidemiologist from Stanford. He's a very well-respected, highly credentialed guy who was basically slimed by and smeared by Anthony Fauci and his cronies at HHS because he suggested that we shouldn't shut down schools and we should have a different strategy for tackling COVID. And they tried to destroy him. I mean, this is a guy who you know, even members of the Stanford medical faculty were, you know, writing letters trying to get him fired. So he, and then he ends up, Trump brings him back to run the operation the next time around. So Linda Yaccarino from X was an honoree, I think, last year. I'm blanking on the other ones. Oh, Jonathan Turley was one again. And Abigail Schreier, who she spoke very sort of courageously about the trans issue. And she was, you know, her books were banned and she was vilified for all of that. This year, the honorees are Charlie Kirk and Andrew Colvitz going to accept on his behalf. And obviously, Charlie paid the ultimate price for having the courage to basically engage in free speech and civil dialogue. And Graham Linehan, who's the Scottish comedian who was arrested.
Yes.
Yeah. And Alan Dershowitz, who has been he's been a free speech guy always, for 40 years. And he's been one of the few people who've been consistent on the issue, oftentimes, you know, to his detriment when he would defend, you know, folks on the left and the right. But he's been pretty solid on the issue of free speech. So, yeah, we do this at the Breakers. It's a big deal. We do it up, and it's a lot of fun. It's important. So if you're interested in coming, everyone's welcome. You can buy a ticket and join us if you happen to be, you know, down there on vacation or you live down there.
What is the date?
It's February 11th, which is a Wednesday. And actually, Carl Cannon and I are going to be interviewing the winners, and we're going to broadcast it on our podcast/radio show.
Oh, excellent.
Yeah. So it's going to be a lot of fun. And again, it's an important thing. I think the pendulum has swung back in favor of free speech after Trump's election. I honestly,
at least away from the Karens.
Well, I don't say this as like a partisan thing, but I do think had Kamala Harris won, I don't feel like, I feel like the censorship stuff would have continued and maybe even worsened a little bit.
Yeah.
But you know, with Brendan Carr at the FCC and some of these folks, they really did put a premium on trying to, you know, restore this at least a certain level of free speech. I think it's still kind of a it's not the freest environment we've ever had in the history of this country, but it's better than it was a few years ago, and that's why we want to continue to honor people who are engaged in and courageous about the kind of speech and arguments that they make.
And it does honor the sentiment and the people of the earlier Samizdat effort, which was to get the public to be able to read and understand what Solzhenitsyn was talking about in his
correct
great book, probably the most important free speech book ever, The Gulag Archipelago. Yes?
Yeah, the Samizdat was an underground press operation in the Soviet Union, and yeah, and that's why we kind of settled on it as the name perfect of the prize. Yeah. So I will add, perfect, by the way, and this is, yes, a little closer to home, but along those same lines, the following Tuesday, so this is February 17th. I think that's a Tuesday.
Sounds right.
I am going to be moderating an event here on the North Shore, in Wilmette, but it is Joe Abraham.
Yeah.
Who is the
friend of the podcast.
You guys have had him on the podcast.
He's a friend of ours. Yeah.
Yeah. So Joe, I'm going to be interviewing Joe, and Joe's daughter, Katie, was killed by an illegal immigrant drunk driver. The 1 year anniversary just passed. And, you know, he has written a letter to J.B. Pritzker asking a bunch of questions. Pritzker, for all of his, again, sort of moral grandstanding about Minneapolis, has, as far as I know, refused to even say her name, has never acknowledged or recognized her, despite the fact that Joe has, you know, he's written op-eds, he's been on the news, he's asked, he's sort of agitated on Katie's behalf and has gotten nothing.
Oh, even worse than that, Tom. It's even worse than that. He had a reporter who was working with him, like trying to cover the story, and they sent a letter to Pritzker's office saying, hey, look, we think that in light of what's happening now, we should get something, some answers here. And, you know, we need more information. And they just, his press office just sent an alternative op-ed to say, you're wrong, this is the reality. And it didn't say, we're sorry about your loss, it's terrible. They just sent him some clipping and said, you're wrong, you've got it wrong.
Well,
you know, if Joe Abraham was a lawyer, they could have sent the Chicago Bar Association to shut them down. That's how they operate.
Well, you know, I was just there was just a story in North Carolina about this young guy who was a soccer player and his girlfriend who were just killed in the exact same manner by an illegal drunk driver. Oh, yeah. Boy. I mean, unfortunately, Joe's not the only one, but. No. Anyway, we're going to do an event with him and talk about not only Katie's story, but just the broader issue of, because that's one of the things that, you know, and Tom Homan mentioned this at his press conference the other day. That's one of the things that really is just kind of sticks in your craw about this whole thing, which is, you know, where were the J.B. Pritzkers? Where were all the elected officials? Where were all the Democrats? Where were all these, you know, white liberal women in the suburbs, where were the protests when Jocelyn Nungaray and Lakin Riley and all these women were raped and killed? Or, you know, were there any protests, any marches on behalf of Katie Abraham? No. And so why is there sympathy reserved for people who are here illegally and who have also, you know, committed other crimes? I mean, those are the people that the government really wants to focus on and get out of the country. And it's just, it boggles the mind that you could, and, you know, Hillary Clinton wrote this big piece in The Atlantic talking about how Trump's, you know, eroded the moral fabric of the country. And that's been part of his thing. And it's like, but where have the Democrats, you know, they
right,
make a big display of, and they get so emotional when it comes to getting people who are here illegally and have committed crimes out of the country? Where's that emotion? Where's that empathy? Where's that sympathy? Where is all of that when, you know, Katie Abraham is killed? It's non-existent. In fact, to your point, Jeff, it's like elected officials often do the, like J.B. Pritzker did the opposite, which is like not even the can't even spare a word of sympathy. It's amazing to me. And it's a double standard and it's infuriating.
It tells you there's something wrong with their point of view. If it can be both things can be true in their world.
Yeah. I mean, I don't have a, I look, I feel what happened to Renee Good and Alex Pretty were tragic. It was tragic. They, neither of them deserved to die.
Nope.
And you can feel sorry for them and, you know, extend your condolences and sympathy to their families but still also, you know, I just don't know why that Democrats can't do it in the opposite direction. When I've seen plenty of people on the right who said, look, I feel bad for Alex Pretty. I mean, it was kind of stupid of him to carry a firearm to, get him in the middle of a
riot.
Right. Yeah. In the middle of a law enforcement operation. That's not a smart thing to do, but he didn't deserve to die for it. And it was a tragic thing. But there's plenty of other tragedies that are on the other side that the Democrats just flat out ignore.
They can't acknowledge it because because what they're about in terms of nullification, this gets back to our nullification issue. By nullifying the immigration laws, they are protecting their own, in their minds, protecting their own survival, because they're protecting the apportionment of congressional districts, and that without that, they have nothing. They're lost. They're losing power as we speak. People are leaving the great state of Illinois, which we love, or I loved, and you guys still live in.
Against my will. Every winter, it's against my will, for sure. Well, and I just got our property tax bill, and that's against my will, too. It's up 50%, seriously, which is insanity.
Well, Tom, I was going to have you. I want to, 3 points of reference I want to clarify. One, you're underselling Real Clear Politics. You guys are closer to 30 years in business than you are 20 years in business. 26 years now that we're in 2026, I believe.
Yeah, I mean, it's kind of, 25. last year was kind of our 25th year of operation, but we're actually going to celebrate it more this year.
Cool.
Do you have any internship programs? Because I'm going to be talking to all these bright students at Hillsdale in a few days.
Yeah.
Where do they go to apply?
Just give them my contact info, I guess. I don't know. We do have interns every summer. We have anywhere from 2 to 4, probably. It's not a huge operation, but we definitely have opportunities for kids who are interested in getting into journalism or data journalism or social media.
Say John Katz sent you. That'll work. That'll get you. That'll be enough.
They're going to be sent to the police beat.
And I also want to say, Sam is that prize winner previously, Renee Devine.
Yeah, that was for the Hunter Biden laptop thing.
Right, which is awesome.
Such an important
thing. Yeah, so that was excellent. And then this we got to plug your show on POTUS 124.
Nope. We moved. We're on the Megyn Kelly channel.
Megyn Kelly.
111.
111. Oh, I missed it.
And we are live. We used to tape, and now we're live from 11 to 12 Eastern. We are her lead-in 5 days a week. And it's been fun. You know, we started the first week of November, so we've been doing it about 3 months now. And it's definitely different doing live radio versus a tape show, especially when you got a guy like Carl Cannon who runs on his own time. He showed up for the show. I'm not kidding you. Yesterday, he showed up for the show with 10 seconds before we went on air. And he thought he was early.
How do you prepare? How do you guys prepare for it? Besides, you have probably 5 TVs on at once. How else do you prepare?
No. I get up and update the website every morning. Sometimes I'm doing the front page. Sometimes I'm doing some of the news related stuff.
Right. I love that.
So I'll update the website, but we have an edit meeting at 8 o'clock Eastern where the three of us hop on Zoom and we talk about, the show and what we're going to talk about. We usually have, it's three segments that are about 18 minutes long. And we have usually the first one is the three of us talking about the news of the day. And then we typically have a guest. And then the third segment, we will do, you know, news of the day, but also some like lighter stuff. We'll talk about music, or we'll talk about sports, or we'll talk about culture. And then on Fridays, we do the You Cannot Be Serious segment, where we highlight the dumbest thing. So we like to end on a sort of a lighter note. So, but it's been going good. And in the show, we get a lot of positive feedback. So if you are interested in politics, it's different than, you know, because a lot of these podcasters are, you know, they're right leaning, left leaning, or whatever. And we, you know, Carl's really a guy of the middle. I can never really tell where Carl's going to come down on a position. He's sort of a classic liberal, I guess, in that sense. And he's sort of a, we joke that he's like a yacht club Republican.
Perfect.
He talks about his boat all the time. He likes to sail, and he's from Connecticut, you know.
The characterization is perfect. Can you get him a cigarette holder like he could, like Roosevelt, like a cigarette holder would be perfect.
Yeah, no, he used to work for, decades ago, he used to work for Jack Kemp. So Jack Kemp's one of his heroes. So he's like a whole
brother, supply side guy. Brother, can you paradigm? Yeah,
exactly. No, but so we have a good time. It's usually a pretty balanced discussion. And the nice thing about it is it's not like, you know, we all like each other. And so all, even when we disagree with each other, which we do quite a bit, but it's all in good fun and respect. We don't take ourselves too seriously. And so, it's a good time. We're having a lot of fun with it.
Well, that's good that you don't take yourselves too seriously. So I have to ask you in closing the final question. Congratulations to your Seattle Seahawks. And I'm waiting for
Woo!
Real Clear, if they haven't, to write an editorial condemning the newspaper sports writers for skipping or not endorsing Bill Belichick in the coaching Hall of Fame.
we talked about this the other day.
Which
was funny. Pretty outrageous, in my opinion. I mean, the guy's one of the best coaches. I mean, you know.
They're jealous because they don't have a hot girl like that. That's what it is.
Well, apparently they broke up, so neither to see anymore. But, you know, Spygate and Deflategate apparently rubbed some voters the wrong way, and they wanted to punish him a little bit or something. It seemed a little petty to me, honestly. But
yeah.
And I'm not a Patriots fan at all. I am a Seahawks fan. They came to town when I was like 7 or 8. And so that's been my team for as long as I used to be a Sonics fan too, but they left town. So I only have the Seahawks. And so, and I've raised my kids here in the Chicago area to be Seahawks fans.
Perfect.
So, we're excited. It's going to be fun. And I love the Sam Darnold story. I think it's awesome. I hope he wins the Super Bowl and tells all of his haters to go pound sand. Because if he loses the Super Bowl, obviously all this stuff's going to stick with him and be back, and he's going to
hate him. Yeah,
right. Yeah, he'll suck again and blah blah blah. So I really hope he, for him more than anything, but also, I mean, it's going to be great to exercise the demons of the loss to the Patriots in 2014, which was, you know, absolutely gutted our franchise. Run the damn ball, Pete Carroll.
you got a running back now.
Oh yeah. I mean, listen,
you got somebody to run now.
We're good. We're good. And I think I feel like we are probably the favorites, but you never know. I mean, one game, anything can happen. And, but I like our team. I like our coach. I think we've done a pretty good job, just in the last couple of years of getting this franchise into championship mode, and we have the fifth most cap space available in the NFL. So
with that defensive line,
and we're pretty young, and
this should be a crime.
Yeah, no, I think we are well positioned to if we win, we are well positioned to have a nice little run for the next few years. So
it'll be a good week. Fingers for crossed. You get that, and the Sam's it prize is going out. So.
That's right. That's good. Yeah. No, it's a big, big February.
Well, always good to have you, Tom.
See you, buddy.
Thanks, guys. Appreciate it.
For Tom Bevin, President and co-founder of Real Clear Politics. For Jeff Carlin, executive producer, WGN Radio, and for me, John Cass, editor-in-chief of John Cass News, where you always get a good cup of Midwestern common sense. Join us again next time, won't you, on the Chicago Way podcast on WGN+.